This is an alternative universe.
See, there aren't any textbooks that teach about these principles.
It's dangerous if the government gets in the business of propaganda.
We need journalistic integrity now more than ever.
Warning, you're listening to the Agenda 31 podcast with Corey Ive and Todd McGreevy.
The thing, remember, names are for things.
That is why the United States respects the sovereignty of the British people and their right of self-determination.
For good reasons, we don't want the government to be the lead on that.
Due to the unique division of political authority in the United States, U.S. citizens are residents in every state and should not attempt to copy the strategies employed by the hosts of the Agenda 31 broadcast without first consulting legal counsel.
Do you have a license for this?
Motivation. What is my motivation?
Because, I'm not okay with slavery, just so we're clear.
As a U.S. citizen, you just don't own anything. You're just a user, and the government owns everything. And the assumption is everybody's a U.S. citizen.
You know, you're going to have to shut up or I'm going to have you arrested.
All the people of the universe were once free to travel and mingle and build whatever they wanted.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to Agenda 31. This is your co-host, Todd McGreevy, being joined by my buddy.
Well, let me unmute that. Corey Ive.
My buddy Corey, I'm trying to give you the cue.
The cue was spot on. It was the finger lacking click on the mute button.
Yeah, it's not the arrow. It's the Indian.
There you go. Yes.
Welcome everybody. Welcome to episode number 119 of Agenda 31. Today is February 12th, 2017. I'm broadcasting. I'm actually marinating right now, in the quasi-administrative district of Scott County, Iowa, overlooking the banks of the Mississippi River. Corey, what's been happening out west? You've been busy.
Oh, well, I've been busy. Lots of stuff going on. Last week I was at a press conference for Consumer Watchdog, which is a... You know, generally, if you were thinking like an Agenda 21, almost said Agenda 31, an Agenda 21 type organization, generally really left-leaning. Its headquarters are in Santa Monica. They ripped Jerry Brown on his stance on being the green governor.
You've got a lot of rules for us, rules for them in California when it comes to the environmental nature of things out there. A lot of nothing to see here kind of things going on.
A lot of that.
You know, there's a drought. There isn't a drought. Give us an overview. And I think we're going to have, some clips next week from that actual news conference?
We'll have some clips next week from the news conference. There was another thing, the State Water Resources Board. Right now, while the dams are overflowing, we got a ton of water here. Snows at like 170% of average. And it all came down in a very short period of time. Well, the overlords are like, wait a minute, we're making so much money and we have so much control over everybody by putting in all these water restrictions, putting out of business these small water districts. They want to keep it that way. So they extended the drought conditions. The emergency drought conditions are extended while water is overflowing. They're having to dump water out through flood channels in most of the reservoirs.
Are they still enforcing these restrictions on water districts with penalties and so forth?
Yes. Yeah. Well, it's presumed that that's what would happen if you use too much water now.
What would happen?
I wouldn't be – there would be fines, in other words, if you go over the amount of water use. Because the legislature is doing everything they can to make these water restrictions permanent. Just like we predicted a long time ago that they're going to call an emergency and they're going to do everything they can to try and get this to be permanent before the drought is over. And the drought's over. But their assessment, the reason why they're saying the drought can't be over yet is because we had 5 years of drought conditions, 10 years of of rain that, you know, that was less than average, and that there's we need more time, when the reality is we don't need time. We need water, and we got all the water.
Yeah. The website's Consumer Watch. Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say Consumer Watchdog did that. I might have conflated the two things, Consumer Watchdog and then the State Water Resources Board is another that I'm hoping to have some good clips from here soon.
ConsumerWatchdog.org is the website, and they right there they have How Green is Brown. It's heavily promoted there. You can check it out. I would say that we probably here at Agenda 31 probably disagree a little bit with the fundamental perspective that the consumer watchdogs might have regarding the so-called climate change. I think these guys are climate change advocates that man is causing climate change. I'm going to presume that that's their position. Am I correct in that?
Yeah, I think you'd be correct in that. Yeah. As far as, you know, an agency that, you know, would be just right under what we rail against, an agency that promotes centralized global control of your local resources, generally you'll find that the consumer watchdog group would fit right in that. What they really highlighted is the hypocrisy. You know, Jerry Brown's out there. He's in Paris talking about how California is going to lead the nation. And even in that hypocritical Agenda 21 world that all of this is occurring in, they're putting out there that Jerry Brown is not who he says he is. And to me, what this is important about is there are fees all the time. California got a court ruling a long time ago. The state obtained a positive court ruling that said if the state decides to add a fee to something, then they don't need voter approval. If they add a tax, then they have to get voter approval. So we've seen just an explosion of fees, which are nothing more than a tax. So you have a California computer recycling fee that was just raised again. There are all sorts of different fees that are related to the environment, yet you have a governor who's talking about being the most environmental governor. He wants you to drink your toilet water. You know, you can't have a brown lawn, all kinds of stuff. He wants you to reduce your driving and only use public transportation. Meanwhile, for his rich oil buddies, they're expanding oil. So it's really a focus on the hypocrisy.
Any discussion of the RICO Act or the RICO case that was being brought against him? We've talked about it many times, but it's been a while since we've touched the wheel on that.
No, it was interesting. Before the conference got started, I overheard somebody who was there who was – they appeared to have a stance of being critical of the watchdog group. And they were discussing with somebody else who worked there, not part of the actual press conference, but asked about that. And then they was straight up, we are not going to discuss that. So
that being the RICO case?
The RICO case, that the watchdog group was not going to discuss it.
Mm.
And I don't know why, other than...
I don't think that they're a party to it. I don't think they wanted...
No, yeah, they're not a party to it, and it's probably just not a good idea to get involved in all that.
Well, they probably didn't want to draw any attention away from their agenda. You know, that's natural.
That would make sense.
You know,
yeah.
we call this presser about our stuff, not, you know, somebody else's challenge.
Right. Right.
So, well, it's good to see. I mean, it's healthy skepticism out there for the so-called left to call their so-called left leader into question. I mean, it's more of a example of that these labels really mean nothing. Governor Brown can wear the label of the so-called progressive all day, but he's doing backroom deals with, you know, big oil behind the scenes.
The thing that they covered here, did you hear about, I mean, we talked about it on the show a little bit. There was a gas leak that was just a few miles from where I live in a place called Porter Ranch at the Aliso Canyon gas reserve. Do you recall that?
I do not.
Well, there's a storage area. It's an old mine of some sort, I guess, and they're using gas that they store in this, natural gas. And it's in earthquake. It's just a horrible idea It's right underneath a ton of residents. It's a huge, gigantic volume of natural gas. And the thing blew a leak. And for, you know, several months, there was just huge amounts of methane and all kinds of you know, what's toxic to humans that was just coming out of this. It is the worst natural gas leak in U.S. history, as far as my understanding.
Wow.
There were some reports that talked about the amount of greenhouse gases that came out of this were equal to a significant portion of the entire output of the state of California. People were getting sick. They evacuated a huge area of residents from Porter Ranch. And they touched on it on this press conference, how it took Jerry Brown 78 days to even acknowledge that this was going on and then completely poo-pooed it. Well, something that's really interesting is Jerry Brown's sister is on the board of a company called Sempra Energy. Sempra Energy owns the energy companies that distribute the gas in the area.
Wow. That was brought up in the presser?
Yes.
Wow. He's just riddled with challenges in terms of accountability. I've not fact-checked this yet. This is at law360.com. They're reporting on January 20, 2017, that a California federal judge on Friday threw out a racketeering lawsuit accusing oil companies and state officials, including Governor Jerry Brown, of conspiring to boost profits and tax revenue from oil production in the San Joaquin Valley without regard for farmland pollution. U.S. District Judge Dale Drozd, D-R-O-Z-D, dismissed the claims brought by the Committee to Protect Our Agricultural Water, which sued Brown, the California Division of Oil, Gas, and Geothermal Resources, Chevron, Occidental Oil and Gas, two trade groups, and other state officials in the summer of 15. That's when we were talking about it. The suit said the industry and government violated the Racketeer Influence and Corrupt Organizations Act with a fraudulent scheme to make permitting for injection wells easier, and that pollution caused by enhanced oil recovery techniques violated the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act and their civil rights. Ruling Friday on a first amended complaint, Judge Drozd issued a 58-page opinion dissecting the committee's case, finding that the claims were short on factual details to support their allegations. Quote, the suit sets out an excessively attenuated theory of causation. It does not clearly allege how the defendant's conduct led to a concrete impact on the environment, induced damage to the plaintiff's farmland, or produced a lower yield in plaintiff's farming operations. End quote. So yeah, the RICO case got dismissed, FYI.
Okay.
I think. I mean, I'm looking.
Surprising.
Yeah, I'm looking for a source here to the actual brief proper, which is, you know, it's funny. Even we're going to get to an Iowa ruling recently that was in the mainstream newspaper the other day, and one of the mainstream papers, and they didn't even link it to the actual ruling. But anyway, okay. So check that box, Corey. It was cool for you to go to that. They call it a presser. I mean, what caught your attention? Why did it even come up on your radar? Corey? Well, I'm not sure what happened there. Why we lost him. Maybe he's...
Are you back?
You're back.
I'm back. It just... Skype froze on me for a second. I heard Corey, it was, and then it went dead.
What I was asking was... It was cool of you to attend that press conference. What prompted you? I mean, why did it even come up on your radar?
Well, there's just so many environmental, you know, social justice warriors in California. I mean, the people I was involved in a playwriting festival this past weekend. It was a lot of fun. And a couple of the people involved in that were attorneys.
Huh.
And they brought up, it was raining, and I said, well, it's great to see that the drought's over. And, of course, they immediately went to, oh, no, the drought's not over. You can't have a drought over with in 1 year when you've had 10 years of bad water or, you know, no water. And what I'm getting at is the amount of people who drink the Jerry Brown Kool-Aid is just insane. That's why I went, is... It's so obvious to anybody who applies any type of critical thinking that, you know, Jerry Brown is not a green governor. I mean, that's what he relies on. He talks about being, you know, for the people, everything. It's just everything he says, he is pretty much the opposite, from using state resources to survey his own land for purposes of oil drilling. Meanwhile, he's telling you that, oh, we're going to add fees to the refining side of gasoline in California. Then we're going to create this special type of gas that can only be bought in California. And we're going to make it where you have the most expensive gas on the, you know, in the country. And we're going to say, well, hey, if you're not willing to pay this, then you must not be willing to take care of the roads. And, you know, you need to cut back. It's always you little people, everything. But when you look at what he's doing, he's raping California. I mean, California is absolutely being just extracted. There is punishing taxes on the wealthy. And, you know, regardless of how you feel about that, about how much taxes the wealthy should pay in the administrative system, it has led to a real exit of people coming out of California, like just heading to Texas, heading to Oregon. Companies are leaving California. It's very difficult to do business here. And the lying that comes out of Jerry Brown's administration is insane. Another example is the budget. Jerry Brown just got done kind of slamming the Texas governor, saying, oh, look, we can lose all these people, we can lose all these businesses, and we're still growing. Our economy is still doing fantastic, and we've still got all kinds of money. And, you know, I'm one of the most fiscally responsible governors we've ever had, and I don't like to spend money. And it's all a lie. The guy spent more money. I mean, he just blows through money on things that do not help the state, takes money that should go to infrastructure. I mean, you drive around in California, we have third world nation roads here. The roads are getting to the point where they're not going to be passable. They're only a few more years of this total neglect, and these roads are not going to be passable. Fair enough, that even began before Jerry Brown. But now with Jerry Brown, the money that is paid when you buy your fuel, when you pay road taxes, when you pay your registration, none of that is going where they say it's going. And because it's an administrative state, they don't have to put the money anywhere. They're allowed to put it into their retirements if they want. And that's exactly what they're doing. The entire state is totally corrupt. You know, we haven't talked about my complaint to the judicial council over that judge and them ignoring the complaint. Even though I have a letter saying that I will get a written response from an attorney, they have absolutely ignored the complaint.
Yeah, it's not
I guess I could just go on and on.
Well,
about
what I think the macro I'm taking away from this is that even inside a statist, even those that embrace statism would like to see their so-called statist leader be the progressive he claims to be. And do something, exactly. do something of common good with this, with the statist authority that he's been consented with, all the little citizen slaves. He's not as advertised.
In fact, I think Jerry Brown is an excellent example of all the people who say, "Oh, Agenda 21 is just about, you know, cleaning the environment. We got to clean the environment. We got to stop global warming. So we got to do these programs." Well, what happens is these programs, when you say these programs, whether it be a local program that is given a local name, but its entire job is to enforce the precepts of Agenda 21, no matter how you look at it, it's a centralized control over virtually everything in your life, including the air you breathe, the air cows breathe, everything. They're now talking about making these fart bags that you'd have to put on every single cow in California. The idea is that cows fart too much, so that's going to lead to global warming, and we're going to have to put these bags that capture the gases on cows. This is what these people are talking about doing. Meanwhile, they are the worst polluters on earth. When I say they, I'm referring to the entire chain of command on anything that is Agenda 21. You follow it up and you'll find that they are the worst polluters on earth. They don't want any competition. They want you to give up all of your rights under this, you know, idea of manipulating you into, well, don't you want a clean environment? Sign over your rights. If you want a clean environment, you got to do this. Well, Jerry Brown is an example of what happens when you sign over your rights and give that centralized control to a foreign authority. And California is just kind of a macro on the world body of Agenda 21. But look at what Jerry Brown is doing with water, what he's doing with electricity, all these different things that he's doing. He is the self-proclaimed green governor, and he is just screwing everybody in California. If you're an environmentalist, you should hate Jerry Brown. The problem is these people, for the most part, and that's why I give kudos to the Consumer Watchdog Group, they cut through just the rhetoric and looked at what actually happened. And so many people in Los Angeles, everywhere you go, they just want to hear things that sound good. They want honey poured in their ears, and that's it. That's all that matters. Just pour honey in my ears and everything's great. And so that's why I went. I was motivated to go there and check it out, because it's a pretty big deal to have a group that is this prestigious take such an adversarial stance to Jerry Brown. Because when you look at the way the LA Times writes about him, different newspapers write about him, they always refer to him as the fiscally conservative governor. You know, they'll pick out a story where he said, oh, I'm not going to pay for these paper clips, and say, wow, my gosh, he's just the best governor in the world. Look, he doesn't want to spend money. While on the other hand, billions and billions of dollars are being spent, similar to the article in the River City Readers, Todd, where the Consumer Watchdog Group here said that $6 billion has been basically stolen from electrical ratepayers here in California to supplement the construction of electricity that we don't need. We have a huge overcapacity of electricity primarily produced by fossil fuels. And it's been a boon to the energy companies in California at the detriment of the ratepayers. And rates, they just constantly raise them, saying, oh, well, it's inflation, whatever. They come up with all these different reasons on why the energy companies need to build, you know, multi-billion dollar facilities. Meanwhile, the facilities that they have, they're getting paid to deconstruct them. I mean, it's just you're getting screwed all the way around by the way these environmental governors are running, because they don't give a crap about the environment. They don't care. They don't care about the air you're breathing. I mean, you can just look at how many sick people were in Porter Ranch. It's insane when you look at how much was just being spewed into the air, and they just don't care.
These are people openly flaunting the system while we ordinary Americans are held to a completely different standard.
The Consumer Watchdog page has a scorecard about Jerry Brown, and one of the things they talk about is the California Environmental Quality Act. Brown exempts state projects from the act wherever they are inconvenient, including for the Sacramento Kings Stadium. So that rules for us, rules for them. He's applying it to the state government. Then there's one under here called Coastal Protection. His appointees weaken the Coastal Act protections, granted a permit to allow radioactive waste to be buried on San Diego Beach. We know some people that run a race on the San Diego Beach. We should ask them if that's actually going on. That's fascinating.
Yeah, and that, I mean, that's the radioactive waste is kind of a complicated issue as far as once it's on site. Like, I know, I'm not familiar with the San Diego, but I do know at San Onofre, there was supposed to be a centralized place where all radioactive waste would go, and the government has spent billions of dollars on researching it, and nothing's gotten done. And so all this waste is required to stay in some cases, it was in 55-gallon barrel drums just sitting outside that had like a 2-year shelf life. And some of these drums had been outside for a long time. I don't know if they've actually changed that. But the radioactive waste that's on site at San Onofre is not a small amount of waste, and it's in a temporary holding spot, which is just stupid. I mean, it's just insanely stupid. But
well, you were talking about Agenda 21, and I came across this posting through one of the financial blogs that I subscribe to, and then it linked back to the Investor's Business Daily. UN official reveals the real reason behind the warming scare, and this is written in early February 10th, actually. Wait, this is from 2015. Well, this is a year ago. Wow. Okay.
That's 2 years ago, Todd.
Yeah, two. I'm sorry. Thank you for the math check there. Yeah, this is old news. It's interesting that the financial blog is referring to this as if it was something new and recent. This was posted February 3rd, 2017 by Martin Armstrong of Armstrong Economics. And then when you go back and you actually source he's referring to Cristina Figueres, the executive secretary of the UN's Framework Convention on Climate Change.
Yeah.
And she purportedly said, "This is the first time in the history of mankind that we're setting ourselves a task of intentionally, within a defined period of time, to change the economic development model that has been reigning for the last 150 years since the Industrial Revolution. This is probably the most difficult task we've ever given ourselves, which is intentionally transform the economic development model for the first time in human history." The reason I even brought this up was that the comment that Martin Armstrong made after he cited this 2-year-old quote, he said, and this is hearsay now. All right. So this is just for discussion purposes. "I was invited to a major political dinner in Washington with the former chairman of Temple University, since I advised the university with respect to its portfolio. We were seated at one of those round tables with 10 people. Because we were invited from university, they placed us with the heads of the various environmental groups. They assumed they were in friendly company and began speaking freely. Dick Fox, my friend and chairman of Temple, began to lead them on to get the truth behind their movement. Lo and behold, they too admitted it was not about the environment, but to reduce population growth. Dick then asked them, 'Whose grandchild are we trying to prevent from being born, yours or mine?'" I thought that was a very incisive.
Well, we know the answer to that.
Yeah. Yours, buddy.
Exactly. Yeah, yours.
Yours. So I want to play, you had mentioned Justice Ginsburg at one time in a previous episode, talking about don't follow the U.S. Constitution.
Oh, yeah, in her recommendation for if you have a new country, don't follow the U.S. Constitution.
Yes, and this is about a 3-minute clip, and this apparently is where she was talking to the Egyptians. This is going back, you know, several years during the overthrow, I guess, of the incumbency there. Let's just see if we can, this will play. Here we go. This is January 30th, 2012. Well, it would help if I turned up the volume. I had it muted on the machine. My apologies. Here we go.
It's a very inspiring time that you have overthrown a dictator and that you are striving to achieve a genuine democracy. So I think people in the United States are hoping that this transition will work and that there will genuinely be a government of, by, and for the people. I met with the head of the Election Commission. I think that the first step has gone well, that elections have been held for the lower house that everyone has considered to be free and fair. So that's one milestone. And the next will be the drafting of a constitution. Now, I can't speak about what the Egyptian experience should be because I'm operating under a rather old constitution. The United States, in comparison to Egypt, is a very new nation. And yet we have the oldest written constitution still in force in the world. Let me say first that a constitution, as important as it is, will mean nothing unless the people are yearning for liberty and freedom. If the people don't care, then the best constitution in the world won't make any difference. So the spirit of liberty has to be in the population. And then the Constitution, first, it should safeguard basic fundamental human rights, like our First Amendment is the right to speak freely.
Even the Supreme Court justices get it wrong. the First Amendment isn't the right. The First Amendment is the guarantee that the right shall not be violated.
Yeah.
But, I always sweat the details. Sorry.
Well, but she's a Supreme Court justice, and you'd expect her to sweat the details.
Yeah.
You know, there's more. It's the same woman that said she'd want to get rid of the Electoral College. She also pushes for democracy.
Yes.
Which is very frustrating to hear come from a Supreme Court justice. And, you know, her writings, I've read, you know, several of her writings, and it's very difficult to get an idea of how she's going to rule on a case, because it doesn't seem like she rules other than kind of how she feels like it. You know, it doesn't seem as often when she comes up with a decision that it's consistent. I mean, that was one of the things about the justice that passed away, and his name escapes me.
Scalia.
You know, whether you agreed with his,
originalist
determinations or not, his judicial decisions, they were consistent in the application of the Constitution. So that gives you, if you're wrong, that gives you the ability to come back and restate your position, fix where you're in error, and get back in line with the Constitution and come back. With Ginsburg, man, it just seems like, you don't know, it's democracy and she's the 51% vote.
To publish freely without the government as a censor, you should certainly be aided by all the Constitution writing that has gone on since the end of World War II. I would not look to the U.S. Constitution if I were drafting a constitution in the year 2012. I might look at the Constitution of South Africa. That was a deliberate attempt to have a fundamental instrument of government that embraced basic human rights, had an independent judiciary. It really is, I think, a great piece of work that was done. Much more recently than the U.S. Constitution, Canada has a Charter of Rights and Freedoms. It dates from 1982. You would almost certainly look at the European Convention on Human Rights.
Wow.
So, yes, why not take advantage of what there is elsewhere in the world?
That's kind of chilling.
Oh, it is. Yeah. I mean, she is, as far as the level of decorum you would expect from a Supreme Court justice, she's batshit crazy.
Mm-hmm.
That's my opinion. I just sent you a link to The Hill, which a few days ago she made the comment that she would be for altering the Electoral College. That's how much she is. I mean, she's publicly said that she doesn't like Donald Trump, right?
Yeah, well, that didn't matter.
And now, and that's fine, but now she's putting out there more of her democracy crap, which she's a Supreme Court justice in a republic, a democratic republic. It's not a democracy. And if anybody should have that right, it should be a Supreme Court justice. So,
but wait, hold on. Haven't we asserted on this broadcast and in this podcast, Corey, that embracing United States citizenship, being on the plantation, as we like to call it, being a federal citizen, even though last episode we took a pause from that and listened to Kurt explain what I heard him say, you need to embrace ownership of that U.S. citizenship so you can control it. But let's set that aside for one second.
Yeah, we need to discuss that a little bit, too.
We do. However, I think that we've asserted that, yes, there is a democracy here, even though the government officials take an oath to uphold the Constitution, which guarantees a Republican with a small r form of government in the several states. That's our foundational guarantee that we point to and tack to every time. Even though that's right there, prima facie, because of these ens legis entities called U.S. citizens and birth records, because of the dynamic that we're dealing with, consenting into the democracy. It is a democracy inside the plantation. You can have majority rules and full discretionary rules for us, rules for them. It's okay. It can be Animal Farm in the democracy.
Well, okay. So in the democracy, let's think of the nation as like a skyscraper, and the Supreme Court adjudicates issues on every level of that skyscraper. And in 50 levels of the skyscraper, that represents a republic. In one particularly crowded level, that represents 14th Amendment citizenship and the federal authority, which is the District of Columbia. And fair enough, that federal authority, if any of the people who are from that floor go down onto the other floors, they're still subject to a democracy. But if the Supreme Court handles, adjudicates issues and is the supreme authority on every single floor, then for a Supreme Court justice to say it's a democracy for the entire building, they are out of line.
Good call.
Because all those other ones, all those other floors are democratic republics. It's just everybody has been taken over by the one floor, which is federal, which I would propose should be at the very bottom of the entire, if you were to view the power structure, it'd be at the very bottom of the building, that bottom floor, and they don't want you going above it. They don't want you getting in the elevator, going anywhere. Everything that you need to have happen, whether it's government services, anything, they have created a department for that on that bottom floor, but it's all federal in charge of under the executive authority of the president. And now you have a Supreme Court Justice Ginsburg who is really speaking out of turn for a Supreme Court justice, saying that, oh, it's a democracy. Well, you know, she's not wrong. That one floor is a democracy 100%. But what we're talking about is you can step outside the building, look up and go, wait a minute, I've only been on the first floor, but there's all these other floors above it. What's going on here? And if you go and look in those other floors, you find that those floors are democratic republics. Those floors are presumed to have citizens of their own. They have their own laws, they have their own constitutions, and the entire purpose of that first floor, that federal authority, is to guarantee that the rest of those floors exist and function for its people.
Agreed. That's what we've always asserted here. And in the spirit of Ginsburg referencing fundamental human rights, I'm going to play a clip from George Carlin. The shuffle feature on iTunes is a wonderful thing. I just lately have just been putting it on iTunes and just hitting shuffle and there's music. But I happen to have an album of George Carlin in my rotation. So every 30 minutes, I get a 2 or 3 minute, George Carlin smack in the face. And, duly warned listeners, there's some profanity here with George Carlin, but this is his final clip of one of his albums. It's called You Have No Rights.
Here's one more item for you, the last in our civics book, rights. Boy, everyone in this country's always running around yammering about their fucking rights. I have a right. You have no right. We have a right. They don't have a right. Folks, I hate to spoil your fun, but there's no such thing as rights, okay? They're imaginary. We made them up, like the boogeyman. The Three Little Pigs, Pinocchio, Mother Goose, shit like that. Rights are an idea. They're just imaginary. They're a cute idea. Cute.
Now hold this thought about rights being an idea. I want to circle back to that.
But that's all cute and fictional. But if you think you do have rights, let me ask you this. Where do they come from? People say, well, they come from God. They're God-given rights. Oh, fuck. Here we go again. Here we go again. The God excuse. The last refuge of a man with no answers and no argument. It came from God. Anything we can't describe must have come from God. Personally, folks, I believe that if your rights came from God, he would have given you the right to some food every day, and he would have given you the right to a roof over your head. God would have been looking out for you.
So there's that Justice Ginsburg-esque fundamental human rights.
Yeah.
He wouldn't have been worried about making sure you have a gun so you get drunk on Sunday night and kill your girlfriend's parents. But let's say it's true. Let's say God gave us these rights. Why would he give us a certain number of rights? The Bill of Rights in this country has 10 stipulations, okay? 10 rights. And apparently God was doing sloppy work that week because we've had to amend the Bill of Rights an additional 17 times. So God forgot a couple of things.
I think that's technically inaccurate. I think that the Constitution has been amended, but not the Bill of Rights.
Correct.
Yeah.
It's like slavery just fucking slipped his mind.
Touche.
But let's say God gave us the original 10. He gave the British 13. The British Bill of Rights has 13 stipulations. The Germans have 29. The Belgians have 25. The Swedish have only 6. And some people in the world have no rights at all. What kind of a fucking goddamn God-given deal is that? No rights at all? Why would God give different people in different countries different numbers of different rights? Boredom?
It's amazing. I mean, I've been a huge fan of Carlin, but I think he totally misses the mark on this discussion.
Well, I agree. Yeah, most people do.
Yeah, I mean,
those rights were secured because people with guns were able to fight off the other people who didn't want them to have those rights.
Well, he gets into the gun discussion at the end here. We're about halfway through here.
Amusement? Bad arithmetic? Do we find out at long last after all this time that God is weak in math skills? Doesn't sound like divine planning to me.
He's presuming that the Bill of Rights is limiting when it's the 10th Amendment says, hey, if we didn't cover it here, it's none of their business, none of government's business.
Right.
It wasn't just like this is the only rights that we're protecting. It's, hey, if we haven't covered it here and it's a right out there by the states or the people, it should be protected. So
sounds more like human planning. Sounds more like one group trying to control another group. In other words, business as usual in America. Now, if you think you do have rights, one last assignment for you. Next time you're at the computer, get on the internet, go to Wikipedia. When you get to Wikipedia, in the search field for Wikipedia, I want you to type in Japanese Americans 1942, and you'll find out all about your precious fucking rights, okay? All right. You know about it. You know about it. Yeah. In 1942, there were 110,000 Japanese American citizens in good standing, law-abiding people who were thrown into internment camps simply because their parents were born in the wrong country. That's all they did wrong. They had no right to a lawyer, no right to a fair trial, no right to a jury of their peers, no right to due process of any kind. The only right they had, right this way, into the internment camps. Just when these American citizens needed their rights the most, their government took them away. And rights aren't rights if someone can take them away. They're privileges. That's all we've ever had in this country is a bill of temporary privileges. And if you read the news even badly, you know that every year the list gets shorter and shorter and shorter. You see how similar?
Well, you're certainly hovering over the target there, but I think for the wrong reasons.
Oh, well, I agree. Yeah.
Yeah. Sooner or later, the people in this country are going to realize the government does not give a fuck about them. Government doesn't care about you or your children or your rights or your welfare or your safety. It simply doesn't give a fuck about you. It's interested in its own power. That's the only thing, keeping it and expanding it wherever possible. Personally, when it comes to rights, I think one of two things is true. I think either we have unlimited rights or we have no rights at all. Personally, I lean toward unlimited rights. I feel, for instance, I have the right to do anything I please. But if I do something you don't like, I think you have the right to kill me. So where are you going to find a fairer fucking deal than that? So the next time some asshole says to you, I have a right to my opinion, you say, oh yeah, well, I have a right to my opinion. And my opinion is you have no right to your opinion. Then shoot the fuck and walk away.
Of course, I don't advocate that at all. That's not why I played that clip. That wasn't he's just going for a punchline there to get some yucks.
Yeah, well, that's George Carlin comedy there. I don't think he actually was promoting the idea.
No, he's being facetious there.
People based on a difference of opinion, but
the commentary about the temporary privileges is right on. That's the U.S. citizenship model. And,
courts have said it. The decisions have been consistent from day one that if you're a U.S. citizen, then your rights are modifiable. And in as recently as the Birchfield v. North Dakota case, where Justice Breyer, who's considered a liberal judge, He said, you know, there are no exceptions to the Fourth Amendment. We just have to see if it applies here. And looking at the situation, we would know, especially listeners of the Agenda 31 show would know, that the Fourth Amendment does not apply when you're getting pulled over by a cop and you have a driver's license.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Speaking of that, we can jump to this case here in Iowa, of all places. Thank you to Michael Angelos for sending me a link to this. And I stand corrected at the Quad City Times own website, the daily paper here. They do actually have a link to the ruling, the full ruling at the Iowa Supreme Court, which I put a link in the chat room for. And this is a fairly short and sweet article. It says, Iowa top court tosses conviction in Scott County traffic stop. The Iowa Supreme Court voted 4-3 to reverse the conviction of a Scott County man charged during what justices have deemed an unconstitutional traffic stop. We conclude that when the reason for a traffic stop is resolved and there is no other basis for reasonable suspicion, Article 1, Section 8 of the Iowa Constitution requires that the driver must be allowed to go his or her way without further ado. Justice Brent Appel wrote in the majority opinion released Friday. The decision ultimately throws out a conviction of driving while barred against J.L. Antrone Coleman. In August of 14, an officer was parked along U.S. 61 in Eldridge and conducted random computer checks on the license plates of passing motorists to see if the vehicle was reported stolen or if there were outstanding warrants associated with the owner of the vehicle. Now, that dynamic is in and of itself needs its own story. I think it just grows over right everybody's head that's reading it. Like, what? You mean they just sit there and they do an RFID scan of everybody going by? And you know, so I don't know how much more proof you need that, you know, you don't own the car you're in. They're just scanning it and seeing if you are, you know, if the computer tells the officer that car has a problem, you're screwed.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a reason to be pulled over. You don't have to make there has to be no suspicion of any type of infraction other than our computer says your license is invalid or our computer says that for whatever reason you're not in compliance with an administrative piece of paperwork.
But they don't even know whose license the piece of plastic is behind the wheel because it's just they all have the – so they're presuming that the car is registered by – suspect so-and-so, defendant so-and-so. It's a presumption of guilt all the time. And so that's, anyway, a check of the license plate of one vehicle that passed him revealed that the female registered owner had a suspended driver's license. It was dark and the officer could not determine whether the driver of the car was male or female. He pulled over the car and determined that the driver, Coleman, was the woman's brother. He asked for the Coleman's license, registration, and proof of insurance. Coleman only had an Iowa ID. At the time the officer made his request, he no longer had reasonable suspicion that a traffic offense had been committed. The ruling stated, based on his ID card, the officer determined that he was driving while barred. He was charged. He filed a pretrial motion to suppress, which was denied. He was convicted of the charge at a bench trial and appealed to the Iowa Court of Appeals, which affirmed the conviction. Coleman argued that one reasonable suspicion for the original traffic once the original reason for the stop was resolved, the officer could not extend the stop by asking for his driver's license, registration, and insurance. Prosecutors argued that prolonging the stop to ask for a driver's license, registration, and proof of insurance is permissible. In a lengthy decision released Friday, Appel wrote that thousands of people drive on the roadways daily and that the central purpose of constitutional provisions regarding search and seizures is to structure and limit the scope of police interference in the daily life of citizens. He noted that traffic stops have emerged as a major issue in search and seizure law and that the use of minor traffic violations as a springboard into consent searches has prompted charges of abuse and racial profiling. Justice Thomas Waterman wrote in a dissenting opinion that until today, a police officer who lawfully stopped a motorist could ask to see his or her driver's license, especially when the officer knew the driver was not the car's registered owner. Almost all Iowans, I believe, would find this activity completely unobjectionable and indeed mundane, but not the majority. Instead, our court has determined that this act of routine traffic enforcement violates the search and seizure provisions of the Iowa Constitution. He wrote that the Iowans that get pulled over expect to show their driver's license and that this practice helps law enforcement get dangerous illegal drivers off the road. Back to that concept that little piece of plastic denotes safety.
Yeah, or that in order for them to enforce traffic law, they have to have the piece of plastic. You know, I mean, if you're... there's a whole nother set of laws for people who don't have driver's licenses that and are born as one of the people of the several states. It's not a free ride. If you don't have a driver's license, it doesn't mean it's a free ride. It just means you don't work for the corporation. You're not a Well, it just wouldn't apply to somebody who is an Article 4 citizen engaged in either commerce or private activity within the borders of their own state.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes to this article and the actual ruling. It's worth digging into. There's some other nuances in here regarding the fact that the...
Well, my prediction is now every police officer is going to know that you can't tell the truth if they get a hit on a license plate, because they're not going to stop pulling people over because they get a hit on the owner of a registered vehicle, which, by the way, is a reason why you should never register a car in your own name. Just never do it. Never put the mailing address as your home address. It always get a P.O. box, get a mailbox, and then come up with a name for your car being registered under. I mean, this only works if you own it outright, but if you own your car outright, come up with a business name and then put yourself as a lien holder. You know, that's a way to do it. Anyway, the practice of pulling people over because they get a hit on there being an administrative violation, not a traffic violation. Now all that's going to happen is an officer is going to say, oh, he drove too close to the yellow line, or it appeared he might have been going too fast. It was a safety check. You know, whatever they need, now they're going to know that I have to come up with something in addition to the probable cause that obviously seems to work, that all they need is just a hit on the administrative file for that registration or anything connected to that registration.
Yeah, there's a lot of details in this ruling. I guess the defendant, when he appealed it, and in the bench trial, never brought up Fourth Amendment protections, never brought up Article 1, Section 8 of the Iowa Constitution either. So there's some dynamics going on and some internal hand-wringing with regards to procedure in the courts and the rules for us, rules for them. You know, apparently if you don't bring up these particular issues at the early stage, then you can't bring them up later. But then there's workarounds around that. And so there's all kinds of machinations going on in the Iowa Supreme Court about that as well in this ruling. So I just dug into it. I'll put some links at the show notes if anybody's interested in that. Thanks again, Mike Angelos, for sending that my way.
Hey, Todd, that text message you sent me about, you know, what do we make of this? The first 10 amendments to the United States Constitution have no application to the states. You want to get into
that? Yeah, that was from Merle. Merle emailed you and he's citing State v. Birch, B-U-R-C-H, 1924. I didn't have to. Do you know anything about this?
I'm not familiar with that decision, but I've read quite a few different decisions that basically support this, that the United States Constitution has no application to the states. And in fact, I think that's consistent with the decision that we kind of broke down a couple weeks ago, and I forget the name of it, but basically the one where we had Jennifer Reed and the dissenting opinion was real critical of that decision, that basically the Constitution, the federal Constitution, does not apply to the states. Yet you can also find decisions that say the Constitution does apply to the states via the 14th Amendment and the Due Process Clause. The key is time. If you look at the time period of when those different decisions occur, I think it is consistent. And without having read State v. Birch in 1924, mm-hmm. It's entirely possible that the state was operating as if it was one of the several states. I don't know enough of the history of Iowa, but it could have been operating that way. Or what it could have been doing was dealing with someone who didn't have a driver's license, didn't have a social security number, and was applying law as if that person had access to Article 4 protections that we're looking to do today. And if that's the case, then they're absolutely right. You're a citizen of your state, and it's your state's constitution that you would deal with. And the employees of that state, for instance, in California, if you're an employee of the state of California under its 1849 constitution, you cannot be an employee of the federal government. So with very few exceptions, you could be a postmaster at your local postmaster and hold a position of office or profit in the state government as long as you didn't make more than $500 a year from the federal government. Today, that's very different. So the term state, when they're saying application to the states, it's important to discern what are they talking about. The other thing is shepherdizing a case, you know, to find out, has this been overturned? Did the justices get it wrong? And, you know, in that particular case. But overall, let's say, Todd, let's say we're successful. One of the things about the Agenda 31 program is averring Article 4 citizenship. The ultimate goal being that the several states relight up their governments and begin to operate with people who are serving in a civil capacity, serving and holding office in the governments of the several states, and that those people have nothing to do with the federal government. If that were possible and that were accomplished, then if you had an issue, if your state was violating the federal constitution but not violating its state constitution, and you want to take something as a state citizen, if you're an Article 4 citizen and you wanted to go to the Supreme Court, you would probably lose if you said, hey, my state violated my Fourth Amendment rights when they did XYZ. You would probably lose that case. It would be the wrong argument. If now going back, how do you, I guess the thing to discuss is the incorporation doctrine. Isn't that what it's called, the incorporation doctrine?
I've heard the term, sure. Yeah.
Yeah, the incorporation doctrine. Well, when you have federal – okay, before I do that, let's go back to that state citizen that the Bill of Rights doesn't apply. So if a state employee is coming after you as a state citizen in your state and they're doing something that in your mind violates the federal constitution, your SOL, you need to stick with your state constitution in that particular contact. But now let's say you've got a federal officer who comes in, Homeland Security – comes in and decides to randomly just stop somebody who's an Article 4 citizen, no plates, no ID, nothing. And then they begin to apply some sort of prosecution that violates the Fourth Amendment. Well, because that person is federally employed, then the Bill of Rights would directly apply in that situation. Now, the 14th Amendment, where states, if people are no longer sending their representatives from their several state government that has nothing to do with the federal government, now the federal government has an answer and says, okay, we're going to send you representatives via the 14th Amendment. And in that, they're creating another form of a state which exists via the 14th Amendment. That state is all run by federal employees. And so it would stand to reason that because it's being run by federal employees, it exists within federal jurisdiction, that now the Bill of Rights would apply. And that you see with the incorporation doctrine. So there's certainly a case where you can say, oh, the Bill of Rights doesn't apply to the states. And then in another situation, everything being the same except for the political domicile of the defendant and the political domicile of the prosecution, where the courts would say, oh, the incorporation doctrine applies, so the Bill of Rights does apply. So it's getting to know how it stands. It's very simple in visual terms. If both governments were running, if you had the DMV and you knew that's for federal citizens, and then you had the office of, you know, state citizen services. I can't think of an office that they would have. Oh, well, no, the militia command. How's that? Whoever commands the militia, that is a completely separate government, but they're both called the state of California. I think it'd be incredibly easy for people to understand. The difference is people are definitely on a single line trajectory as far as government. When our government, the way it was put together, is incredible. It's very complicated compared to other governments, and it's complicated because it was built from a power structure of the bottom up rather than the top down. And most people are so used to top down government. There's so many people who tag me on YouTube, and they leave comments on YouTube that, you know, there's two ways that laws can be made. One is when the president gives an executive order, and one when Congress gives an order, and they're both laws, and you're subject to all of them. And that's just not the case. U.S. citizens, 100% subject to executive order. I would agree with that. Anybody who's a federal employee, 100% subject to executive order. But if you're a citizen under Article 4 and you have no connection to the federal government, then the executive orders have no applicability to you personally.
Well, let's use that as an opportunity to dig into a little bit of what Kurt shared with us last week. We kind of had a fork in the road, if you will, as my recollection of a pathway. The averring Article 4 state citizenship has here to date meant using a common law ID to establish your domicile instead of your residence, and to eschew or get away from the contracts of adhesion like the Social Security Administration and DMV. And Kurt's approach was, in addition to all that, go claim ownership of the salvage title, effectively, the birth record, and prove right. your ownership of it by going through the machinations of demanding the ownership of the former organic material taken at birth. I think that's the quick summary.
Yeah, I think that's a fair summary.
And and have you ruminated on that since our discussion at all?
Well, I have, and you know, I don't think where like Kurt's his presentation is wrong. It's not like, you know, okay, so let's say the afterbirth is also called human. I won't say that is incorrect. What I think is incorrect as far as Article 4 citizenship is concerned is the determination, the conclusions he's made from that. So to come up with a hypothetical, if somebody right after the 14th Amendment was passed, you have many states that are, you know, for instance, California ran its 1849 state for multiple years after the 14th Amendment was passed, and you had 14th Amendment citizens in California who were trying to affect California government. They didn't like the way the California government was running, so they tried to use what they perceived as an advantage and to claim 14th Amendment citizenship. So if you take that same person, and let's say now to help guarantee that you could show you're a 14th Amendment citizen, let's just say they started issuing birth records immediately for people for that. And somebody is issued a birth record, and then they say, I'm going to take this birth record and I'm going to file it, and I'm going to claim ownership of it. Well, there's one problem right there, is that you're claiming ownership of a certificate of the original record. You're not getting the original record. The original record is on file at the Department of Public Health in California, and that you're not going to get. That's theirs. They have the original record. So you're just getting a copy. So what you're doing is you're saying, I own this copy. Now, let's say that person back in 1876 decides that they want to run for office in California. And they say, I'm a citizen of California, and I'm going to run for office. Here is my birth record that I say I own. They wouldn't be able to run for office, Todd. They just would not be able to serve in the government because of the way that record is constructed. That record is constructed in such a format that would prevent them from having citizenship status in the Article 4 or state. Now, it's possible if the goal is to just get out from under or find a, you know, some sort of legal hitch that no one's exploited yet, perhaps it's possible to say, I own the birth record and now you can't do anything to me. But the problem with that is it stops right there. It doesn't allow, it would actually prevent someone from serving in the offices described in the 1849 Constitution. And it also would prevent someone under the common laws of England from having citizenship in one of the several states. So you could only be a citizen of the United States by claiming that you're the owner of the birth record and that it's yours. So I did take a look at some of the things of law of salvage and since we had Kurt on, which was, it was very interesting and got a lot of feedback. People thought it was great, but I do think that it is a strategy that is counterproductive to those who would want to emulate the political standing of what the framers protected for people. When those Bill of Rights apply to a group of people, they applied to a group of people with a certain political standing, and that those people were described under Article 4. And using a birth record as a some sort of identifying document would prevent you from having that citizenship.
He's, I think, asserting through his letter he sent to the DOJ and the letter he got back that they have acknowledged his ownership of the record, even though he may not have possession of the original native record. And I could be wrong on that. He might have the native original record. I'm not sure. You know, each state is different. Each county is different with regards to record keeping and access and all that. You've attempted to, you were told by the record keepers in California that you can't take it with you, but you can come look at it, and nobody's ever asked to look at it. So,
yeah, nobody had ever asked for it, and it's described as their property. You know, you can go look at a court record, but you can't just take the court record. You can get copies of it, but you can't take the court record. You can't just physically take it, and they don't get it anymore. If it were the case where you could go to, I mean, this would be interesting because now this would fit with what Curtis Colin Beck was saying, is if you could go and get the original record from the state and it's not their record anymore, and now they need your permission to use it because you're the owner of it and you deny them permission of it, and then you take that record and you just seal it up and say, this isn't me, this is just a record that they wanted to use against me, and you aver Article 4 citizenship, then that is a completely different story. That may very well be something that is possible under the idea that the record is abandoned. But the idea that the record is abandoned is just, it doesn't fit, at least in the way the law of salvage works, because it's not abandoned. The state owns it. They're the ones claiming that they own it by their possession. You know, Todd, if you have something in your house, the presumption is you own it. It's not abandoned. I can't come in and say, oh, I abandoned this. I'm going to come take it from you, and now it's mine. The government has that same right to ownership of property, and they are the ones that own the property known as the birth record. It's up to you on how you use that record, and they trick you into binding that record with other agencies, like Social Security, getting your driver's license, joining the military.
I'm sure that we're missing
all these different things that once that jointer happened.
Go ahead. I'm sure that we're missing some fundamental, as you call it, hitch inside here. And, I'll endeavor to circle back with Kurt. I mean, he talks so fast and you got to keep up. It's hard to, he expects, he's on his own. He's on his own level. I mean, he's obviously at peace with himself and very comfortable with where he's at and worked hard to be where he is. We recognize that and respect it. I just like to understand it a little more, and it takes effort. It takes time, energy, just like anything else that is worthwhile.
It does take effort. I would just be, very cautious that birth record is a powerful document, and, he still has his driver's license and registration and everything else, which means, until that is done away with, then there's not really a challenge there.
It all depends on how he's recognized. Should he have an encounter? What would happen? That's the test, if you will.
Right. Yeah, if he were going to aver Article 4 citizenship, and he brought up quite a bit the diversity of citizenship, but the way that was applied is that there was a diversity of citizenship within one person, and that was the way you could get into federal court. Well, the diversity of citizenship getting into federal court, my understanding, is the diversity of citizenship between two different parties. So I think there might be some conflating of ideas. I mean, anybody who is really going out and putting information out and doing their best, I think that should be applauded. He's done a ton of research. I think the research he found on them redefining the states is – a fantastic little nugget. I just think the conclusions from that research that Curtis has taken is incongruent with averring Article 4 citizenship from the framework of how the several states would view it. And I think that's critically important to having a case heard at SCOTUS, is that you're clean. I don't think somebody going into the Supreme Court of the United States saying, I own the birth record, when the actual original record's still on file with the government, and the birth record indicates that you're a bastard, would have any type of standing in the Supreme Court as far as claiming to be a citizen of one of the several states. That the citizenship under Article 4 was pretty harsh. Remember, some of those people owned slaves, you know, and the states were known for denying citizenship to people. That's why the 14th Amendment came about. So it's not a panacea. It's a dangerous weapon. And if you're going to play that game, I would assume that you're going to need to play it right and make it where there's just no way for the Supreme Court, which, by the way, I think is the only entity left that will recognize Article 4 citizenship.
Well, I'll circle back to Kurt offline and try and get a little more nuance on that, and actually more clarity, I should say. And he'll probably say, you know, join his class, which, again, that means time. So that's our limiting factor. I did take some time recently, Corey, and update the website with some new album art, if you will.
Yeah, great work, Todd.
Yeah, it was fun. Finally got back to that. I'm way behind on the album art. My apologies. I know everybody's just waiting with bated breath for that, but
well, of course they are.
We're going to try and I need to update some show notes. I'm woefully behind on show notes. So to that point, I think what we'll do is thank some people here and call this one in the can, if you will. We have some Article 4 karma going out to the supporters of Agenda 31 podcast. We appreciate your support financially. We've got Jess M., William H., Shay O., Christopher B., Chain. We have Adrian S. and Dean B., who's been supportive. We appreciate that very much. Let's go to the next one here. We've got Stinger, Kiwi, Mitch L., 316, Kristen P., Life of the World, Lauren A., Scotty C.'s checking in with some support. Thank you, Scotty. Vital Nutrition Research, JCC, and we appreciate everybody's efforts to support the lowest risk.
Very much. I have to fix that. The Stringer one was not a supporter of the Agenda 31 show. That actually got in there somehow.
That's cool.
A payment of going out and collecting news stories with that camera rig I showed you about.
Excellent.
So Stringer is indirectly supporting the Agenda 31 show.
I called it Stinger, but okay, it's Stringer. Yeah, you're doing some stringing out there. That's really cool. That service you're part of. It's excellent. Corey's doing lots and lots of different odd jobs, by the way, everybody, you know, so he's, it's hard to have a strategy to make a difference in averring Article 4 state citizenship. And when you're the support goes a long way. What's that, Corey?
Yeah, absolutely. And the career that I came from is completely incongruent to Article 4 citizenship. I was in, what I would say my career would be in the insurance industry doing investment grade insurance contracts. And that requires all of the different types of licenses where you have to say you're, you know, an Article 4 or a 14th Amendment citizen. So it has been challenging. There's no way to do that career in today's environment and aver Article 4 citizenship. So that's where the jack of many trades, master of none skills come in to be able to keep afloat. So
we appreciate the support, everybody. And you may be listening to us on the playback on the No Agenda stream at noagendastream.com. You can hear us on Sundays on that stream right after Curry and Dvorak's media assassination. They start at 11 a.m. Central, go to about 2, and then you'll hear the playback of Agenda 31 there. And you've been listening to episode 119 of Agenda 31. Do not forget to ask yourself, what is your strategy to make a difference?
Arms and broken wrists. authoritarian anti-establishment politics is endemic.
Did I hear you say? Did I hear you say? You think you try better? You think you try better when you're this way? I can see it coming from a million miles. Watch it, hear it coming.
Here you go, America. You are free to do as we tell you. You are free to do as we tell you.
What am I to do? What am I supposed to do?
So the job here is to write you up as a citation, disorderly conduct, for offending someone.
This is just an accident waiting to happen. 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 This is just an accident waiting to happen.
Some of you may die, but it's a sacrifice I am willing to make.
Support, share, and subscribe at agenda31.org.